Welcome everyone to the Buying Tampa Bay podcast. You're here with your hosts, Chase Clark and Peter Murphy today. And today we're going to be addressing a very interesting topic, and that's the risk involved in real estate investing. So often we run into people that know what we do as real estate investors, and they think it's the riskiest thing in the world. You know, when you think of real estate investors and owning rental properties, you have visions of these cliche horror stories of being a landlord, like the tenants who destroy your property, or pipes bursting in the middle of the night, or that 2 a.m. phone call about a toilet overflowing. You know, you name it. But I'll tell you that we have rarely, if ever, experienced some of this stuff in over 20 years of investing in real estate. And I'm serious. This stuff hardly ever happens, even though it seems like when you talk to people, it's happening all the time. That's not to say that it's not happening all the time somewhere. But if you're investing wisely and you have an experienced management team, the risk of those things happening for you as a landlord can be significantly diminished. What do you say about that, Peter?
I'm getting anxious just thinking about the topic of risk in real estate investing. You know, so much of this is personality, isn't it? And, you know, how we approach whatever it is that we're getting into and whether or not we handle risk well, or whether or not we tend to be more anxious in terms of how we approach it. And I do kind of think those concepts are very closely related. Maybe we'll get that to that a little bit in the conversation. I also loved your opening monologue, Chase, where you said these things are probably always happening somewhere. They're just not always happening to you, which is really an important point, right? It's not like every night you're going to get a phone call about a toilet overflowing, but some landlord somewhere is. And if we compile all that exposure into a big bucket, then man, real estate seems like the riskiest thing and the most undesirable thing in the whole wide world, right? And I get why people wouldn't want to do it, because that would be enough to make the most risk averse person, just like our risk tolerant person, fall down and cry. So no, that's not the way it is. And occasionally you're going to have bad things happen to you in real estate. And of course, that's what makes the headlines. That's the stories you tell. And that's what makes so many investors, novice and experienced, decide that this is not for them. But this episode, I think, is a great one because we want to talk through some of these factors. We want to talk through the concepts of risk that we experience and anxiety, and just really try to put all of that into context for people. We had a really interesting conversation with a former colleague the other day talking about the negativity that existed within his industry. And it's one of those things that I think many industries have to deal with more than others, that you have constant drumbeat of problems that you're managing. I don't always imagine every industry having that exact same reality. But in real estate and real estate investing, that's a big part of what you're dealing with, negativity. And that does have an effect on people. It could make them decide this is not the right industry for them.
Yeah, you know, and one factor that plays into this is that real estate investing really is what people perceive to be an alternative strategy. You know, since the time you get your first job and you're told by your HR department about a 401k, and then you've got maybe an investment advisor that's telling you to drip money every month into a mutual fund, you know, all revolving around the stock market and more traditional investment assets, that's how you form your opinion about what real investing looks like. It's a very passive thing where you send money off to some fund or some manager, and you get a statement every month and it's up or down and you really have no control over it, but that's what investing looks like. And because everybody's doing it, it's perceived to not be so risky, right? Real estate's something entirely different. It's not like that. It's definitely more involved, more hands-on, and a little bit of a different animal because you got tangible assets in play. You're not getting a statement every month necessarily. Maybe you are from your property manager, but you can drive by your asset and look at it, right? And so a totally different strategy, different paradigm, if you will, when it comes to investing. But something that I think in this episode, we're going to try and help people better understand the real risk involved in something that may be considered alternative, right? Not necessarily what all the mainstream is doing.
That's exactly what our objective is. And isn't it interesting that something that is so fixed and so tangible would be considered an alt investment? And everything that's considered an alt investment right now is considered higher risk. And that's just the way our vernacular is kind of set up. But maybe we should address this right out of the gate, Chase. What is risk? And help us all understand that a little better.
Yeah. So, hey, Webster's Dictionary says risk is the possibility of loss or injury, right? That's what risk is. So, you know, when you think about that simple definition, I mean, everything we do is risky. I mean, getting in your car every day to drive to work or take your kids to school or, you know, lifting weights at the gym. I mean, there's lots of risk involved in life because at any moment there's the possibility of loss or injury going on, right? And so I guess the thing that impacts each of us individually is how we think about that risk, because some of those rote things that we do every day, we don't perceive them to be risky at all. We don't perceive that there's any possibility of risk or injury involved in doing these things, even though statistically speaking, there probably is more risk than we think. And so much of this is about our mindset and how we look at things, and therefore how we perceive the risk involved in engaging in them.
So as a society, there are things that we have accepted the risks for, right? Like driving a car, right? We get up every morning, jump into a car and drive. And it's a highly risky thing to do because there's a high chance of loss or peril associated with it. But as a society, we've decided that's an acceptable amount of risk to take for mobility and freedom and individuality of expression and everything that goes along with being able to get into a car and go somewhere, right? And that, of course, is because we start doing it at the age of 15 or 16, and we do it multiple times a day, every day. And so we must think that exposure to that risk has a big influence on whether or not it's perceived as a big risk or not to you. And frequency of engaging in that activity, the amount of knowledge you have about that. I think for the first driver getting in the car, I have one of these first drivers. He's super tense and, you know, perceiving all kinds of risk around him, at least for the first day, right? And then, you know, and then of course it wears off over time, but he perceives everything as a challenge and a risk because he's a total noob at it. And then once he gets a little bit of experience under his belt, that risk goes away. So think about the amount of knowledge and exposure and life experience that must go into something in order for it to not appear risky anymore.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so many things affect whether we're going to be risk tolerant or risk averse toward any activity in life. You know, like the new driver, he's going to be very risk averse to all kinds of things revolving around driving. But can you imagine if a first time driver in his first time out on the road gets involved in a major accident? What's going to happen to his risk perception and his risk tolerance for driving at that point? His aversion is going to go off the charts. He's going to be scared to get into a car again. And so all these kinds of life experiences, as well as the education factor, play big roles into people's risk tolerance or risk aversion toward any particular thing. Experience is so important. And so often, We're not the ones that directly experience things that shape our aversion or tolerance toward risk, but we often just hear what other people have experienced, and that also plays a big part in changing our attitude toward risk when we look at certain things in life.
Yeah, those are our trusted advisors, right? I mean, we have those when we're learning to drive and in just about every other area of life. And those trusted advisors tell us that something's a good idea or something isn't. And it's based largely on their experience or their, you know, involvement with it and what they have personally had, what kind of losses they personally have. And if your advisor is that guy who lost his house during the Great Recession 10 years ago, you're going to stay far away from real estate investments because that guy's only got bad experiences to share with you. Right. So be careful about who you're listening to about this sort of stuff. You've got to listen. You got to ask enough people, have enough trusted advisors in your life that someone at least has got a positive experience with real estate investing in order for you to even want to get into it to begin with. There are lots of people out there who have had wonderful experiences in real estate investing, but because they've got their heads down and they're working so hard at it, they're not plastering that story all over the front page of the news. The people who are plastering that story are the people who have experienced tremendous loss. And so our trusted advisors become naysayers in those kinds of instances. I'm not asking for you to go find someone who just preaches what you want to hear, but there are lots of people who have had very positive experiences. And if you're interested at all investing in real estate and you want to get beyond your first day jitters, then you want to make sure you're listening to someone who has demonstrable and long-term success in the industry. They will completely change your perspective on the market.
Yeah, and so because the real estate investor industry, if you will, has got this perception of people that take big risks and sometimes have big rewards that come from taking those big risks. As real estate investors, we often get lumped in to these circles of other people that are a little bit shady, right? You need to think about gamblers, right? Gamblers that take big risks and sometimes get big rewards, and other kind of, you know, people out there that society in general is skeptical of, right? They see them with lots of money, flashy cars, flashy clothes, all these kind of things. And they think, well, they must have done something crazy, you know, immoral or something unethical to achieve that kind of wealth or that kind of position in life. And that's why we as investors are often labeled, you know, as we were by a former president, greedy landlords, right? That's what we are. We're greedy landlords, us real estate investors.
Yes, speak for yourself, Chase. I'm abundant, right? I know, listen, no, totally right. Yeah, that's the label. And it's easy to do because there's not a lot of transparency in the industry. It's not like this has been a heavily sunshine type industry or one with all kinds of public disclosures. It's typically not done at the national level or on the stock markets, right? Where you are required to disclose financials and processes and procedures and make forward-looking statements. None of that exists in real estate investing. So that lack of transparency increases the perception that investors are cutting corners or acting unethically. And once again, I think it's a misunderstanding based on the concept that investors are just heads down and working hard. And it is a very individual industry. I think this contributes to the fact too, and some of the challenge that exists for many of us in the industry. The entire effort is an individualized effort. Even if you've got a partner like Chase and I do, who shares some of that burden with you, it's like a partnership. It's two guys and their team maybe, but it's not a big group of people, you know, jumping in together to share in the challenges that you face day to day, or even the blessings of the rewards that you get. There's not a lot of short-term rewards in it. So you're not getting some instant gratification kicks that would make you positive and keep you going and really kind of build up some of the energy around the industry. Much of it is long-term stuff. Much of it is individualized. And all of that just, I think, helps contribute to what's a lack of transparency in the industry.
Yeah, and that individuality is interesting because so often it manifests itself by successful investors creating YouTube channels where they flaunt their success, right? They want that affirmation that they've done something great, that they've executed on a plan, they've achieved their goal, or they've, you know, done some awesome flip deal. And so it just kind of fuels that fire of this negative perception because you see these guys out there on social media that are flaunting their success, it seems at times, because they're not doing it in what most people might perceive an appropriate way, or maybe they feel like they shouldn't be doing it at all, you know, just raining dollar bills off on their Bentley, you know, but, you know, that doesn't help us out at all. It doesn't help with this perception, but I think it is because of that individuality. They don't get the affirmation of their success and what they've been working hard toward. And so they self-affirm in that way. And that doesn't help. Doesn't help them. Doesn't help anyone involved in this industry.
It doesn't. I mean, and no doubt there are some shady apples. There are some like shady participants in the industry, folks who aren't up and up about the way they handle things. Let's also be careful before we throw anyone in a non-transparent industry under the bus. There's plenty of industries out there that are fairly covert in their dealings. And that doesn't mean they're dishonorable. Let's look at the entire military sector or the military intelligence sector and suggest that that is probably something you could apply to that sector as well. Not super transparent, but probably very honorable, the majority of them. But some bad apples are going to turn this sense of malfeasance up a little bit. There certainly is some of that. But most investors, most mom and pop investors certainly, which we would consider ourselves mom and pops to some degree, are not like that. They're hardworking people. Rolling up their sleeves, getting to work hard, trying to develop their own bit of the American dream or their interpretation of it. And their interpretation of the American dream is a sense of freedom and not being involved in a corporate structure that kind of controls their time the way so often those environments do. And real estate gives you some freedom and an individuality. It gives you the things that you probably are looking for. But with every one of those blessings comes a challenge, right? And that challenge is risk. and anxiety as it accompanies it. So tell me, what are the risks that, as you've experienced them, Chase, that you have to learn to contend with in real estate investing?
Well, you know, it's not unlike a lot of other things in life, but I would say that if I had to name one of the top risks involved in real estate investing, it's managing human behavior, right? Because at the end of the day, that's really the transaction that we're involved in. It's we're buying or selling a property from another person. We don't know. We got to know what motivates them. We've got to know, you know, how we can make a deal. And then if we're holding a rental portfolio, we've got to manage the behavior of our renters, because behavior management and human behavior can be erratic is really what fuels our ROI in real estate. You know, we've got to have our rent paid every month, and we've got to have people that will take care of our properties and minimize our maintenance out of pocket expenses and damages when they leave the home. And that's really what fuels our ROI, is managing that human behavior.
Yeah, we're not dealing with predictable systems at all in real estate investing, from human behavior, which is wildly unpredictable, to houses and actual fixed assets, which, I mean, that couldn't be any more unpredictable. And the timelines, longevity timelines of these systems is completely unknown. You don't know how they were installed or what quality of the multiple of factors that go into every piece of real estate might have been. And just think about how many of these individual systems exist in any given piece of real estate, right? From the blocks and the plumbing to the major mechanical elements, down to the variable factors in land and how your neighbors and what they're developing on their land might in fact impact yours. And then the constantly changing legal environment that we have to contend with. The unknown factors in real estate have to be the greatest source of risk, for me at least. And as I watch other investors too, they just have a hard time quantifying that. If you're just like have a full frontal assault from thousands of variables, it's just very hard to know how to even tackle that. And so I think most people don't, because it's too hard to enumerate the possible problems that could happen. And if you can't even enumerate them, then how can you possibly know what kind of risk to quantify? It's an off the charts level of risk that most people perceive in real estate.
Yeah, one of the biggest mental roadblocks, I think, for a lot of people when it comes to becoming an investor or even having longevity as an investor, is realizing that people aren't going to behave the same way that you are. And so you know how you live in your home. You know how often you change your air filter. You know how you clean your refrigerator. You know how you don't overload your washing machine, right? But you don't trust that tenants in your property are going to treat those same systems the way that you would. And so that gives you anxiety, right? It gives you heartburn. You want them to behave in your investment home the same way that you behave in your home. And that's just not always a reality. We can educate them on what the expectation is. We can help them along if they don't understand how a house works. But at the end of the day, you've got to be comfortable with the idea that tenants aren't going to live in a home the same way that you do. Just like you've got to be comfortable with the idea that when you buy a stock, you're not on the board making the decisions for that company, right? It's the same kind of thing. There is some separation between the action and the function and you as the owner or investor.
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I also think that there's just a huge world in here of cost knowledge gap that affects people and makes folks feel just very exposed in the housing market. Yeah. You know, so what is a plumbing repair cost, right? I think any of us are aware that could be wildly variable depending on what person we call, depending on what the extent of the problem actually is, depending on what is underlying the manifestation, because it might look like a leaky line, but it could be a bunch of other things underneath that leaky line that caused it to begin with. And so as we look at what possible risks exist and how to quantify them, because we have such a hard time nailing down costs and connecting costs with those risks, it creates magnifies really the impact of that risk far beyond what many of us are comfortable for. That is something that I don't know a good way to get away from, because we as investors have tried to put together all kinds of master templates of costing and have made estimates for all kinds of repairs. And I would say that we're pretty good on some of them, but in some we're way off, and we've been doing this for 25 or so years. So tough challenge to get on top of, and definitely an increasing contributor toward our risk, the riskiness of the real estate investment.
Well, you know, we spoke earlier about the individuality of being a real estate investor and how sometimes you're all by yourself on an island doing this activity. But I can't stress enough how important it is as an investor to form a team. It doesn't have to be people that invest with you, but it's people that you know that have experience in all aspects of the industry. Because the team, the collective knowledge of a bunch of investors out there in an area is much better than whatever your singular knowledge base might be on any of these topics. And so investors are willing a lot of times to refer out good vendors, to share knowledge of pricing, to help you along the way, as long as you're not maybe directly competing with them in a property next door or across the street, or you're taking up all the time of their best vendor. You know, they're willing to provide that information to you. And so I would just encourage everyone, or suggest to everyone, I think that one of the ways you can mitigate this cost knowledge risk is find people who have a better knowledge of it than you do and network with them, right? You've got to have that kind of network. And not that everybody out there is going to understand this idea, but people that have 10, 15, 20 years experience in the industry, you can be pretty certain that they have turned over more than one stone trying to investigate the most effective cost and effective time solution to almost any problem you're going to experience in a home.
Yeah, without a doubt, that team is so important. And keeping yourself humble enough that you can ask that team the questions, you know, whether it's a vendor or a third party or another investor, to not think that you need to know it. Excuse me, not to not think that you need to know it all on your own. And that you can go ahead and ask them humbly for the piece of knowledge that you might need. Not thinking that you have all that knowledge is such a bargaining chip for you when you go to the table to be able to say to them, I have no idea what the answer to this question is. So I'm just humor me and help me avoid making a big mistake. Keeping that very humble perspective will allow you to ask questions that you would ordinarily be embarrassed to ask. You know you have enough success under your belt that you don't need that person's validation that you are going to be talented. So ask them the dumb question and don't be afraid to be looked askance at as you ask that question, because you're going to gain from that information exchange incredibly valuable knowledge to help decrease your risk in real estate investing.
Yeah, there's definitely strength in numbers when it comes to knowledge, you know, and as your knowledge increases with experience in doing this, your level of anxiety and the perceived risk of some of these things is going to diminish somewhat, because as you get some of these situations under your belt and you figure out solutions, you'll become a better problem solver. And that will help you out along the way tremendously. But this network is also going to help you with some of the negative aspects of being a landlord, right? It's like that's one of the big issues that we hear from people all the time is, you know, I'm just tired of everything breaking on my property. I'm tired of having to call my tenant to collect the rent when they don't pay on time. You know, I'm tired of having to deal with the code enforcement, you know, because the tenant won't pick the trash up in the yard. You know, the HOA is on my back about the lawn not being mowed. You know, all of these things seem to sometimes create this negative aura about this being a landlord and having to deal with tenants, right? And so, you know, how do we compensate for that?
I think it's a justified perception. And there's a lot of negativity to manage in this industry. And if people are inclined to be dissuaded from doing something because of negative energy, they need to check whether or not this is the right one for them. You must develop the tolerance to handle some negative energy. And I think in each of us, there is a charge that we've got to learn how to handle tough things. Because there's great reward that comes to those people who get good at handling difficult situations repeatedly. And we see that all throughout life, right? Real estate is no different. And there's a lot of negative situations you've got to figure out how to handle in the real estate market. So getting good at handling those is critically important. And that comes by accepting the existence of them. You're not going to get rid of the adverse effects of real estate investing. Tenants will always be late on their rent. There will always be some middle of the night problem to contend with. If you're a property manager, you will always have owners that are not going to be happy with the way things are going for their property. If you think you're going to get rid of any of those things, then you're going to live in a perpetual state of dissatisfaction because You're not going to in this market. After all the years that we've done it, I don't have a single day that goes by where I'm not dealing with something really unhappy. So getting used to it, I think, is the first step in that. And then also being willing to say, hey, not only am I getting used to it, but I'm willing to delight in it. I'm willing to say this kind of challenge is going to make me a better human, a better man, a better woman, a better investor ultimately. And honestly, it'll make you more empathetic and sympathetic when the problems arise in your life and the life of people around you. You'll have experienced it and you can literally be strong for them. I don't see much of a better upside to learning how to deal with hard things than that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's just some people out there that they're tired of dealing with the hard things. And so, you know, they're getting to retirement stage and they just don't want to be in the trenches, right? They don't want to get the phone calls. They don't want to have to deal with collections and whatnot. Well, you know, there's a very simple solution to that for a lot of real estate investors out there. And it's finding an experienced, competent property manager that you trust, right? I mean, this is what we do. We've been doing this since 2008. For investors, right? We've been managing their properties for them, taking the experience that we have in the industry to help them control costs and then bearing the burden of all the negativity that sometimes comes along with having to deal with non-compliant tenants, right?
And that's our job.
Yeah, it's the tough thing, right? And nobody wanted to do it when we started in 2008. And still, I think very few people want to do it. But people do see value in it, and investors can find value in it because it may cost you something to hire this manager, but you're going to see a far greater return, even if it's just peace of mind and being able to put a barrier between yourself and some of the negativity that may arise from being a landlord.
Well, we've talked about it a lot, right, Chase, that time heals all wounds. And so if you're considering exiting your real estate investment because things are getting a little hairy or tough for you and you're just not, you know, the aptitude for that right now, you give it a little more time and watch that investment continue to accrete value to your portfolio. That's a good thing in most cases. If you don't have to bail now because you can find competent management in the short term, get competent management and get another 5 years of compounding interest or compounding returns on that investment. It might be a huge benefit to your portfolio just to endure a little while longer. So certainly consider that. But help contextualize all this, Chase, because how do these risks differ from any of the risks we experience in just about any other investment in that I might consider at any given time?
Yeah, you know, so post-COVID, right? So many investors thought, wow, we've seen this incredible run-up. There's going to be a bubble. There's going to be a housing crash. It's time to get out. And then I can throw all my money in the stock market and ride the new stock market wave that's going to take off and be a wonderful thing for me, right? I mean, I heard that just about everywhere you turn from people, right? That was the strategy they were going to implement. Well, I hope they didn't do it because it wouldn't have worked out so well for them. It would have been much better for them to keep their properties and to have management. But when we talk about risk factors at play, real estate is not unlike any other investment you're going to engage in. I mean, there are still economic factors, there's liquidity factors, and there's market factors where supply and demand are at play, right? And so, you know, thinking about the economic side of things, right? That's what's in everyone's mind right now with inflation, you know, where are prices headed? Where are interest rates going? Where's consumer confidence? You know, all these economic factors can impact your housing investment. You know, they can impact it from the tenant's perspective and what they can afford in a rental. It can affect you as the investor and thinking, you know, positively or negatively about the outlook of your investment and where your property might be headed. And, you know, same thing exists in the stock market, right? The stock market is struggling every day. If you want to be on an emotional roller coaster, just watch your stock portfolio go up and down every day and try and predict where it's going to be tomorrow. Good luck. I can't do it. I've got a finance degree and an MBA. I have no idea what the stock market's going to do on any given day.
Well, right. That's why your advisor tells you to not check it all the time, right? Yeah. Because if you did, you would be like a ball of anxious nerves watching like the hour by hour movements of your stock value. And the market itself does a disservice to investors who are inclined to be anxious by showing them that. I suppose we could put an index in place that showed the value of real estate doing that, just such a thing, right? And it would be highly stressful. But Zillow has done that for us to some degree too. So are you popping up Zillow all the time and watching the value of your home change from month to month? Right now, if you were doing that, you might have observed a small decrease in the value of your home. And that's a little stressful, right? Because that's your biggest investment and it's supposed to be your sure thing, right? But since you haven't sold your asset yet, that number is meaningless. And you're not going to sell it when the market's down, hopefully, unless you have to move. And you're certainly not going to sell it when it's down below what your basis is or what you've invested in the property. So, you know, you look at this, it doesn't functionally differ from other things. There is risk. There are timing decisions that you've got to make on your own. Maybe in some ways, it's less risky if you've brought leverage to your purchase decision, because my guess is you haven't financed the purchase of your stock portfolio. You put hard cash, dollar for dollar, in there to buy those investments. Many times when you're talking real estate, you can actually use other people's money to make that investment. So functionally, that's less risky by definition than the person who puts in 100% of the value of their investment into it. But of course, the dollar amount is often higher. And for many people, it represents a huge amount. And we all look at our homes as investments, don't we? We used to say all real estate is investment real estate, not just the home you're getting rent from. It's the house you're living in too. You're viewing that as an investment. So in that sense, it's a little different because you don't live in your stock portfolio, right? You are living in your house and you view that as an investment. We all do. So there are some factors there that ought to be considered, should be considered differently. But functionally, don't we all look at this and say, hey, these are risks that exist in every market. And so everywhere we're going to have the same exposure. I honestly think the people who have done the biggest disservice to the perception of risk in the housing market are conventional equities brokers who want to tell you to choose their investment strategy over a real estate investment strategy. They're competing for the same dollars and they want you to invest in what they do. They're making it a very persuasive case that real estate is risky because they don't get to spend your money on their investments if you invest in real estate. Just a thought.
Yeah, that's right. And I'll add to this. I mean, one of the reasons why real estate should be appealing to people who have an anxiety level about monitoring their day-to-day investments, I guess I should say that have elevated anxiety because they are monitoring their day-to-day investments. And as an aside, you know, Robinhood has probably created more anxiety for people than any app you could ever imagine on your phone if you're investing with Robinhood, just because it's so easy to get to that information right at the fingertip. But real estate is so much less volatile, right? Even if you're watching daily the value of your home on Zillow, it's not changing very much, right? The stock market is all over the place, up, down, wildly, 2%, 1%, 3%, up or down almost every day, right? And so you've got much less volatility investing in real estate. It's a much more stable asset to own. You've also got the length of time that it takes to transact a property, to sell it, or to liquefy your investment. It's not instant like it is with a stock. It takes a month, 45 days, 60 days to sell a piece of property. But that's a good thing because it slows down knee-jerk reactions, right? You can't just have a knee-jerk reaction and unload a property at the snap of a finger. You've got to strategically undergo a process to sell that property. And if you need the money right away, you may think that's a negative. But it plays into this idea that real estate is a solid, less volatile investment environment for you and your money, and something that can provide you more peace of mind from that perspective if you choose to engage in it.
So, Chase, so what, right? So what can we do with this information as we all look to be better investors, more risk-tolerant people, more knowledgeable people? Can we avoid risk and the anxieties that come with real estate investing?
That's such a personal question, I think. You know, it's like if you're prone to anxiety and if you're prone to want to know minute by minute what's going on, there's probably no investment out there that's going to quell that impulse that you have to be that way. However, we're never going to remove risk from any investment scenario. But I think some of the things we just talked about with the lack of volatility, the stability in a real estate investment, and having a long view and having an appropriate investment strategy for anything you invest in is going to help out with some of these perceived risks and some of this pent up anxiety that comes from the moment by moment desire to monitor what's going on. So I think having a long-term view and viewing real estate for what it really is a very stable, non-volatile asset will help you in considering to take that step and invest.
Yeah, you know, so I think that knowledge always decreases risk and anxiety, right? When we know what's going on. So I recently had a plumbing leak at my house. And when I didn't know what it was, you know, you're full of anxious energy. You're like studying, examining, trying to figure out what's going on. Your mind is doing crazy gymnastics, you know, telling you that things are falling apart, right? But then when you find out what the problem is, it's not like there isn't a problem, but all of that goes away, right? Because now you know what it is and it's time to fix the problem. Man, you've got some other challenges to face now, but the worry and the risk have diminished to near zero. Because you know. So the best advice we can give to people who are trying to really stay ahead of risk and anxiety investments is to get the right kind of education. Really familiarize yourself with what you're doing to help reduce uncertainty. But don't overfamiliarize yourself. There's a risk associated with that too that you might never act. But certainly get enough knowledge that you need to diminish the kind of risk, the anxiety that comes with lack of knowledge. It's a big deal. And second of all, I think you can really build the kind of mental toughness that you need to help you deal with the risk of anything by exposure to that item. Just facing your fears, right? Talking with the tenants who are delinquent on their rent makes you just less afraid of the monster under your bed, right? Dealing with the leaks, you know, having a leak and addressing it and fixing it within a reasonable cost and a reasonable time frame, and realizing that it wasn't the end of the world when that leak happened, and you know, maybe losing an hour of sleep at night even wasn't that big of a deal for you. Now you're a tougher, stronger person for having dealt with that adversity. You can develop the mental toughness just by the right amount of exposure to some of these negative events that occur naturally in places. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think developing that kind of callousness actually makes you a better human being, and you ought to do it because you'll come out of it stronger and more rounded as a result.
Yeah, we all need to be good stewards of our money. And in order to do that, we've got to invest in something. We can't bury it in the backyard. We can't put the money under our mattress. And we definitely can't leave it in a checking account where it's earning zero interest, basically. And so no matter what you choose to invest in, you've got to overcome some of these hurdles, right? There's a mental toughness to it. There's an awareness and an education aspect to it. And so if you can do that on your own and you can get educated and you can become aware and you can become comfortable with these investment alternatives to be the best steward of your money, you should definitely consider a real estate aspect to your investing. Okay? I think it's critical, especially if you believe in diversification. Because you can diversify with stocks and bonds and things like that, but real estate is an important component of that diversification. But if you're one of these people that just can't do it, right? You can't get over the hump. You're too anxious. You are very risk averse. Partner with someone, right? Partner with a great real estate advisor and a property manager who can provide all that awareness and education and experience that you're lacking right now to help you achieve great returns on your money and to be a better steward of what you're investing.
Yeah, exactly, man. This has been a fascinating conversation. I love talking about this subject because I am afraid of it, right? So for me, it's the kind of thing that every time you kind of deal with you talk through some of the challenges you're going to face, then they just become less scary. So I love it. Glad we have a chance to, you know, in our partnership, some things that I would say you're less risk averse about, some things that I am more risk averse about. And, you know, we're able to be there for each other about some of those things. So if you're looking for a good partnership, find one who doesn't share identical risk tolerances to you. And hopefully you have some risk aversions that person does not have. And together you will be so much more successful as you learn to tackle all the risks in life. So Chase, where can people go to learn more about, you know, what it is and what we do?
Yeah, check us out on homeprop.com. Lots of good information on there about investing. about what we do as advisors in that role and how we can help be your property manager, how we can be your expert and your advisor as you seek to invest in one of the best investments you'll ever make in your life, and that's real estate.
That's not bad. I like it. Chase, thanks so much for the conversation today. Look forward to the next episode. And for now, Peter out.
All right. Peace out. Thanks, man.